Anglers, welcome to Teaching Fish and Anglers Club for May 2022. I'm Captain Lance Dalton, and hey, we've got some really exciting stuff, some stuff we really haven't ever really covered in the Teaching Fish and Anglers Club coming up here in May. We're going to talk about inland lake walleye. You know, in our part of the world, the Great Lakes kind of dominate the walleye fishing that we do, but in most parts of the walleye country, inland lakes are where fishing is, and May's a great time to talk about it because around the walleye belt, this is when opening day actually happens in most states. So we're going to talk about inland lake walleye, how they're different from Great Lakes walleye, how to understand what kind of bait options are in that, how that affects the fishing, when, where, and how you're going to have to catch those fish, how to determine lake types to help you find the right lake, and we're going to talk a little bit about presentations, basic presentations, to get you started catching inland lake walleye. Don't miss it. Join us this month, May 2022. Teaching Fish and Anglers Club, talking about inland lake walleye.
Just the facts.
It's a fact that fluorocarbon fishing line is here to stay, and in the right applications, it can help us catch more fish. Fluorocarbon is not negatively affected by exposure to sunlight or water, and it has a refractive index close to that of water, so it's almost invisible to the fish when we fish it. But be sure that you select the right fluorocarbon for your application. If you need a leader or you're tying crawler harnesses, make sure that you grab a fluorocarbon leader material. It's stiffer, a little bit thicker, it has more abrasion resistant, and it's gonna hold up to constant use. A trollable fluorocarbon has a little bit of stretch in it, and unlike mono, it doesn't have to be changed as often because it's not affected by UV rays and water. And lastly, a limp castable fluorocarbon is your best choice if you want to use it as the main line on a reel in situations that fluorocarbon can give you an advantage. Buy the right fluorocarbon, spool it up, and I promise you, you'll catch more fish this season.
Just the facts.
Welcome into Teaching Fish and Coffee Hour Plus for today. It is, let me see my screen over here. It is May 11th, 2002, and summer is kind of showing itself. It is here. Fish on the Detroit River continues to be good. A lot of our friends on both Lake Erie and Saginaw Bay are having a tough time with the wind. It's getting a little tougher, but fishing should be kicking off pretty good. I got a nice report today. One of my buddies down on Lake St. Clair catching some big smallmouth. So fishing is in full swing. Summer is kind of starting to slowly make an appearance. We're into, if you look at our calendar periods from a couple of weeks ago, we are kind of in that pre-spawn, spawn, post-spawn, depending on what fish you're targeting. And fishing is good right now. One of the best times of the year. So make sure you're going to get out. All right, a couple things to do tonight. We're going to kick off our educational part of this with fluorocarbon line. You know, fluorocarbon line is a big deal. I hope you saw the just the facts we ran before we started tonight. Fluorocarbon in the right application is an amazing tool for us to use. And we're going to talk about those right applications and picking the proper fluorocarbon line tonight. Then we're going to take a quick little break. Then we're going to come back. And after the break tonight, kind of our fun time tonight, I want to talk about gorpers, people who move in when they see people catch fish. I want to talk a little bit about etiquette. I want to talk a little bit about why people don't like them, and how to actually do it properly. Actually, how to actually see somebody catch fish, move into the spot properly, be part of the group, and actually really most of the time be welcomed as opposed to being somebody that another boat would like to shoot a flare across the bow. So we're going to talk about gorping and kind of how to move into a spot. So that's going to be our fun topic after a quick break. All right, let's go ahead and get started. Hi, everybody. How's everybody doing? Gary, hope you're doing well. Good to see everybody. And I want to talk a little bit after the break about a little bit of fishing world news. I want to talk about that as we wrap up tonight. Somebody pretty important to the fishing world passed away. I want to talk about kind of the impact of what I call the big three and the fourth person we could actually add to make the Mount Rushmore of fishing. I just want to spend a few minutes talking about those guys at the end of the night. So let's get started with our educational part, fluorocarbon line. Now look at, in the big scheme of things, fishing line is probably the least expensive part of everything that we do, right? It definitely doesn't cost the same as a rod or a reel or some of the baits that we use. But it is the most important piece of our presentation puzzle. Number one, it's our only link between us and the fish of a lifetime, right? If we ever hook that fish or any fish that we catch, but definitely if we get a chance to catch fish for a lifetime, the only link between us and that fish is the fishing line. That has to be good. The right fishing line also makes the presentation good. There are applications that if you don't use the right fishing line, take vertical jigging for example, right? If you use a really soft, low diameter mono, you're not going to catch as many fish as you do with a braid. And fishing line is application specific. In 2022, one of the things that I think has come a long, long way from the old days is fishing line and picking the right exact fishing line, abrasion resistance, proper amount of stretch, the right diameter, the right ability to see it or have the fish not see it. Those things, we can get really specific with our fishing line. That's what I want to talk about tonight, focusing on fluorocarbon lines. So let's go ahead, and get started. So fluorocarbon line, what are the huge advantages of fluorocarbon? Why is this such a big deal? Well, number one, the biggest advantage of fluorocarbon is fluorocarbon is not negatively affected by UV rays or water. Two things that kill monofilament are sunlight and water. Well, we have a tendency to catch a lot of fish in the water outside. So sunlight and water kills monofilament. It destroys the molecular, easy for me to say, the molecular structure. It breaks the line down, makes it necessary to change line often if you use the monofilament. Fluorocarbon does not do that. You can leave your rods out in the sun. You can leave your line act just being out in the day, like I do in the pontoon. I just leave everything on the pontoon. In the water, it's not going to soak up water and stretch and lose its properties like monofilament does. So it makes it a much better option for a lot of fishing. Because of that, it lasts longer than monofilament. We're not changing it as often. We're not recalibrating because as monofilament gets wet, it starts to stretch. So you have to recalibrate every once in a while, even if the line doesn't wear out, because it loses its actual diameter. The diameter gets smaller and it doesn't fill the reel as much. Fluorocarbon is great in specific applications. We're going to talk about those a little bit later tonight. And one of the things that I think is probably the least important part of fluorocarbon, but was a big deal when fluorocarbon first came out, the refractive index of fluorocarbon is about the same as the refractive index of water, which means we are assuming it's basically invisible to the fish. So we'll see. Another thing that I forgot to put there, fluorocarbon, the right fluorocarbon in the right situation is more sensitive than a mono is. So something to think about. So those are the advantages of fluorocarbon line. All right, let's talk about the different types of fluorocarbon line, because one of the mistakes I see a lot of people make is they use fluorocarbon as a very generic, I use fluorocarbon. Well, okay, that's like saying I drive a car. Right? Fluorocarbon is very, very, very specific. So let's talk about the first type of fluorocarbon I think we need to know as walleye fishermen, and that's a leader material. I use Sunline Super Fluorocarbon. That is my favorite. It's very inexpensive. It's a little bit thicker diameter. It's very abrasion resistant and very stiff, which is what a leader material should be if we're running leaders for vertical jigging, if we're running leaders for trolling, if we're trying crawler harnesses. This is the line you want to use. You want to use a good quality leader material. I like Sunline Super Fluoro. Abrasion resistant, a little bit higher diameter. It's the stiffest of the fluorocarbons. And again, it's great for leaders, harnesses, tying up trolling rigs, right? If you're going to tie meat rigs for salmon fishing, you want a very, very stiff leader material fluorocarbon. So anytime you are at the business end, you want to make sure that you're using a leader material. I like the stiffness of leader material on my trolling rod. So I'll run, I'm going to talk to you about the fluorocarbon I run on my main line with my trolling rods, but my leaders are this. I like them stiffer. They give the baits a little more action. The stiffer that line is, it hangs a little stiffer and it gives the baits a little more action. So this is something you should have in your boat, right? You can buy a good spool of it, 16 pound, 20 pound, what I use for most of my walleye fishing. 200 yard spool should cost you somewhere around 13, 14 bucks. You can tie a lot of 6 foot leaders with 200 yards of fishing line. It's going to last you forever. So make sure you've got some good quality leader material for stiff line applications. Okay. All right. Next one I want to talk about is something fairly new, and that is what we're going to call a casting or a trolling fluorocarbon. Now, Sunline was the first company to do this. They came out with what was called FC Crank. That's what I have right here, Crank FC, Crank fluorocarbon. One of the issues with fluorocarbon traditionally is it didn't have a lot of stretch in it. So if you kind of put the hammer to a fish, originally fluorocarbon would actually just snap. It didn't have a lot of built-in stretch. Well, if you're fishing crankbaits or spinnerbaits, which is where this was designed for, because remember, abrasion resistance, low diameter, right? Great knot strength. That's all advantages of fluorocarbon. But we needed a little bit of stretch for the bass guys fishing crankbaits and spinnerbaits mostly. So they came up with a fluorocarbon. They formulated a fluorocarbon that has a little bit of stretch in it. Myself and a bunch of guys in the walleye world loved it for trolling. And now they came out with the same exact line, but labeled for walleye guys. It's called Troll FC and comes in a little bit bigger spools, obviously, because we need a little more line. But this is a fluorocarbon. Couple things. Thin diameter, 16 pound FC Crank or FC Troll is the same diameter as 10 pound Berkeley XT, 013, 13 thousandths of an inch, which works perfect on the Precision Trolling app. It's oval shaped, so it feels the reel better. A round line has a tendency to sit on top of each other. An oval line sits in between, so you can actually get more line on your spool. It has a little bit of stretch, about 16 to 18% stretch built in, which is perfect for pulling crankbaits, casting crankbaits, casting spinnerbaits. It gives those fish just enough stretch to kind of not snap the fluorocarbon, and it gives us good control. And again, it's because it is fluorocarbon, very abrasion resistant for clips. Now, if I don't have a mess on my rods, I'm on my, you know, Jeremy's on it three seasons. I have some of my rods. I have 24 rods ready to go on the pontoon. I have some of those rods that are still calibrated that I have used almost every day for the last 3 years. Because I do calibrate them, it doesn't lose its diameter and it doesn't stretch like mono does when it gets wet. So once you get it calibrated, it stays there unless you have a big mix-up, and I run a leader. So everything bad happens on my fluorocarbon leader. If you guys know me, I run a lot of flicker shads on Saginaw Bay, and I run a lot of 25 back, 35 back, 45 back. Those are my three numbers 90% of the time. Those releases on the offshore boards are going on the same place time after time after time after time after time again. And I'm getting some of these rods are going to go on their fourth season without being changed. You can't do that monofilament. I don't care what monofilaments you run. You keep putting clips on the same exact spot, you're going to get 10, maybe 12 trips, and that line is going to start to get frayed. It's going to kind of break apart. You're going to see little hairs. And that means that the line is shot. Fluorocarbon Troll FC, Crank FC does not do that. So yes, it's a little more expensive. It's about three times the cost of a traditional monofilament, but you're going to get 2, 3, 4 years out of it, and you're not going to have to re-spool. When I was guiding a typical guide season for me, when I was using the Supernatural Mono, which I still love, the Sunline Supernatural Mono, I was re-spooling, not recalibrating, re-spooling because of the wear and tear 2 to 3 times a season. Well, now I've got lines or rods with Troll FC that I'm going on my fourth season without changing the line. So it's kind of a cost value thing. So something to think about as you're rigging up your trolling rods. Okay. Let's get rid of that. Jeez. All right. The last one I want to talk about is a castable fluorocarbon. I use this for two different situations. So a castable fluorocarbon, like a Sunline FC Sniper, which is kind of one of the leaders in the fluorocarbon world. Thinner diameter. It's kind of more like a Berkeley XL type of line. Thin diameter, very low memory, so it doesn't coil. Lower stretch, so it has very, very high sensitivity. And it's great on spinning reels or bait casting reels. FC Sniper, I think they make all the way down to 2 pound tests. I think they make all the way up to like 60 pound tests. So it's a line you can run on casting rods, you can run it on spinning rods. It doesn't have any memory, so you can cast it all day. It's a great line for casting crankbaits. It's a great line as a main line for slip bobbers. If you like slip bobbers, the slickness lets the bobber slide through very easily, and It has very, very low stretch, so it's got great sensitivity, and you get better hook sets than you do with mono. The other place I use FC Sniper, I carry FC Sniper 4.6 and 8 pound on my boat. I use it for my leaders on my slip bobber rigs. Leader material is too stiff when those fish can actually look at that. You want that jig. I fish a small jig, smaller than this, but I fish a small jig below my slip bobber, and I tie a loop knot. I tie a uni knot and pull it open so there's a loop. And that 4 pound, 6 pound sniper is very, very thin, but it still has all the advantages of fluorocarbon, and it lets that leech kind of move that jig around. So this is something that I use as a leader material. Main line, I use like 10 pound as my main line on my slip bobber rods. I use 4 pound or 6 pound as a leader. Almost all of my spinning rods are rigged up with sniper on it. Casting crankbaits, casting small spinner baits for crappies or for walleyes in the weeds, jigging rods that I'm not using braid. So there are some times that I actually do use this FC Sniper for actually casting. So that's kind of an option that I really, really think is a big deal to have. So FC Sniper is good. Roy says he uses Sniper 16 for leaders, jigging and casting. It's a little thinner, and it's not quite as stiff as the leader material is. So it is a good option for jigging leaders and for casting stuff. So if you're casting jigging wraps, if you're casting and retrieving rattle baits, if you're casting and retrieving, you know, puppet minnows or shiver minnows, that type of stuff, Walleye Nation Creation Rip and Glide, it's a great, Sniper is a great, great leader material to use for that. You obviously want a little bit heavier test for that. Okay. All right. Let's kind of move on. So three different types of fluorocarbon. Let's kind of move on. Anybody have any questions or comments about fluoro? Jeremy says he loves the FC crank. He's used it for the last three seasons trolling. I know Jeremy does a ton of trolling on Saginaw Bay, Lake Erie. Roy says he uses Sniper 16 for leaders. Again, a little thinner diameter, a little more movement on your jig than a stiff fluorocarbon. So again, three different types of fluorocarbon, basically a main line for trolling, a thick, heavy leader material for tying crawler harnesses, trolling leaders, tying up rigs, that type of thing, crawler harnesses, and then a castable like FC Sniper for thin leaders where you still want the advantages of fluorocarbon, you want a little smaller diameter, or you want to actually use it as a main line on a casting or a spinning reel for really just about any technique. Now, fluorocarbon does sink, so it's not the best option for jerkbaits. I fish a lot of jerkbaits. I did fish a lot of jerkbaits when I was bass fishing. I still fish them for walleye in the weeds. You cast on a floating crankbait and you're kind of snapping. I don't like fluorocarbon for that because it does sink and it makes the bait kind of dive a little bit more than just on top. Soft jerkbaits, that just triggered off something. Soft jerkbaits were one of my favorite ways to catch bass. But anything that you want to stay up on the surface and keep coming across the surface as opposed to diving, fluorocarbon is not a good option because it does sink. So, mono is not dead. There are some great applications for mono, but I just wanted to talk to you about the applications for fluorocarbon and get you guys dialed in. I don't know anything about it per se, but I know a lot of folks use fluorocarbon under bobbers for steelhead. I know Lance Key, when we were drifting skein for and flies and yarn for steelhead, he uses fluorocarbon as sluggos. I loved sluggo fishing. Absolutely loved sluggo fishing. One of my favorite ways to catch bass. I know he uses a fluorocarbon leader under his bobbers. You got to be careful if you're going to use it like on a live bait rig or something that's going to be close to the bottom, because again, fluorocarbon sinks. So it's not a great option for, we're going to talk a little bit later, a couple weeks, about weed walleye presentations. We talk about our weed drift rig. You don't want to use fluorocarbon there because it sinks. You don't want to use fluorocarbon on live bait rigs where you got a Lindy rig and you got a leech you want up off the bottom on a float, because fluorocarbon will negate the flotation of the float. So you want to use mono. So, braid, mono, fluorocarbon, they're all different. They all have applications. So hopefully this helps you understand what fluorocarbon you need in the application you are going to use. Okay, any questions real quick before we send her off to the second part of tonight? Anybody got any questions or comments? I'll wait a few minutes here because we're a few seconds ahead here. So all right, any questions on fluorocarbon? What to use, when to use it? Okay, let's take a quick break. We're gonna kind of segue into our next session. Let's take a quick break. Oh, hang on a second here. Tyra says, fluoro while on harnesses for running bottom bouncers can be an issue. Great point. So Tyler's right, right? When you're running on bottom bouncers, even though fluoro is a good option because of the abrasion resistance, if you're going to fish really, really slow bouncers, and I mean slow bouncers, fluorocarbon may sink too much. Bouncers at 1.2, 1.3, 1.5, especially with a good size spinner blade, you've got enough lift for the spinner blade and enough forward momentum that fluorocarbon won't sink. A float is a good idea on that, but if you go really, really slow, fluorocarbon can be an issue on bouncers. Gia says, I've been using P-line fluoro coated on my bait casting and fluoro. Don't see much difference when fishing for bass. Can you give some insight on fluoro coated? I really can't because I haven't used it a lot. So the fluoro coated line, let me back up. Let me answer it this way. If I'm going to use fluoro, I want all the advantages of fluoro. I don't want another line that's actually just coated with fluorocarbon. I think you're better off with an actual true fluorocarbon that's actually formulated for what you're doing. You know, P-Line, another great company, obviously Sunline. Sunline, I think, has, I looked the other day, I think Sunline has 9 or 10 different formulations of fluorocarbon. And I'm trying to find a sheet. They used to have a sheet that basically they have like 8 characteristics of the line, you know, stretch, durability, abrasion resistance, knot strength. And they had a chart for each line that kind of showed each one of those on a scale of 1 to 10. So you kind of pick the right line. But Gio, I like straight fluoro. You know, that those double lines, where you have a line that's one material and then coated with a second material. You know, Berkeley tried that with their sensor line, didn't really stick around very long. So I would tell you, stick with straight fluoro, buy the right fluoro for what you're doing. I think you're going to be a little bit happier than something that's kind of a hybrid. So that's my opinion. I don't have a lot of experience with that coated stuff. I know what it is. I've never used it. So if you've got something to add, that'd be awesome. So Emmett says he fished P-line coated for a season, didn't like it. He's one of our, you know, he's a bass guy for the most part. Again, I think it's one of those things when you try to do two things, you don't do anything right. That's kind of a one size fits all type deal, right? So I think just stick with straight fluoro. Okay. Okay. All right. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Let's roll into the break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about gorpers. I'm going to explain to you what a gorper actually is. There's between a gorper and a high-speed gorper. And we're going to talk a little bit about the etiquette of moving in on a spot where people are catching fish, because there is a right way and a wrong way to do it. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back to talk about sharing spots with other anglers.
Hey, angler, would you like to become a better troller? If so, check out a Teaching Fishing Trolling Boot Camp this summer. 4 hours of high-intensity, hands-on, on-the-water training with one of the Teaching Fishing staff will cover all the basics and pro tips you need to become a better troller. Class size and dates are limited, so use the link on the screen to get all the details and sign-up information. Learning to become a better troller is easy with the Teaching Fishing Trolling Boot Camp.
Are you ready for the Spring Detroit River Walleye Run? Do you understand the three major migration routes into the Detroit River from Lake Erie? The timing of each route? Where the fish that use each route end up to spawn? Or how changes in our winters have affected the amount of fish that use each route? Check out the Teachin' Fishin' Detroit River Workshop, now available for streaming at teachinfishin.com.
Just the facts.
It's a fact that one of the most important things we teach here at Teachin' Fishin' is boating safety. Having an inflatable PFD on any time you're on the water can help save your life when an accident happens. You know, I've been on the boat when something goes bad, and it goes bad very, very quickly, and there's very little time to react. So, a high-quality inflatable PFD are easy to wear, they're comfortable, they're not bulky, they allow for full fishing movement, and they could save you in case of an emergency. Make sure you've got an auto-inflatable, inflatable PFD on your body as soon as that boat leaves the dock, and don't take it off till you're tied back up. We want you to come back from every fishing trip and join us back here at Teachin' Fishin'.
Just the facts.
Alrighty, three great things there. Trolling Boot Camp. If you want to get signed up for that, you can go to teachinfishing.com, click on the events, find the Trolling Boot Camp. We've only got a few spots. I think we have three morning classes, and I think three afternoon classes, four people each. We don't have a lot of spots left, so if you're interested in that, make sure that you sign up. They're really fun. 4 hours on the boat, on the pontoon. We spend an hour at the dock talking about some basics, and then we get on the water and actually let you guys hands-on do everything you need to do to learn how to troll, so we can kind of show you how to do it, help you learn, and get you all set up for trolling season. Detroit River Workshop. Look at Detroit River. They're still really on fire, actually. You can check out fishing reports at Lance Valentine Sport Fishing every night, but the Detroit River is on fire. Look at, if you fish Detroit River and you have not downloaded that workshop, I promise you, you're missing it. You're going to catch a lot more fish with the information on that workshop. Download it now. Get ready. Study it all summer so you're ready for next spring. And then you can ask some questions if you want to over the summertime. But get that downloaded. Again, teachinfishing.com. You can find that there. And obviously a PFD. Don't leave the dock until your PFD, everybody has a inflatable PFD on. And don't take them off until the boat is back at the dock and tied up. Bad things happen extremely quickly. I've been a part of a couple little issues. They happen real fast and things get hairy real quick. Have a PFD on. Makes a big difference in your safety. So, all right, let's talk a little bit about garper. So, I think I need to go back and revisit. I have it somewhere. We did a way back a Walleye 101 fishing dictionary or terms. But a garper, for those of you who don't know, in fishing terms, a garper is someone who sees somebody catching fish and moves right in on the spot. A high speed garper is someone who is on plane and running and sees a couple people catch fish and moves in to their spot. So you definitely don't want to be called a garper because it is a negative connotation everywhere. And you sure don't want to get a reputation as a garper because that's a sure way to not get information, not get told where the fish are. And it's a sure way to have a couple guys team up on you and push you out of a spot, to be honest with you. So that's what a garper is. So again, you don't want to be that. So let me tell you what I made a post the other day that, you know, I'm not a big fan of garpers. So the other day, and let me give you the full example. So the other day we were fishing a very shallow ridge. We're on the edge of two channels that are 25 to 30 feet deep. And between those two channels is a rock ridge that's about 8 to 11 feet deep. It's a very, very thin, maybe two boat widths wide. And we were up there catching fish. It's a great big fish. A great spot for big fish. Unfortunately, it's very close to a public ramp. And, you know, so I don't fish it all the time because I don't want everybody to know about it because it's a very, very special spot and you can catch some nice fish there. So we were fishing it the other day. And look at, I know number one, I know people know who I am. Number two, people know my boat. Number three, I share information and I know for a fact I'm going to have company most days. And I accept that part of what I do is sharing information, helping people catch fish, and with that comes the negative part of having people on a spot. I get that, I've accepted that. I'm okay with that. But what this guy did is he was running back to the ramp, saw us catch a nice fish and instantly turn around and pull it. So high speed groper. He had no idea that spot was there. We're going to talk about etiquette in just a second. What he proceeded to do was get on top of the ridge, get snagged twice on the gravel that's in there, and drove back upstream with his big engine to get a 30-cent jig on hooked, and then proceeded to go finish his run, run back up, and actually run right on the edge of the ridge. So he basically blew the fish off there. He had no idea what was there. He had no idea how to fish it. He had no idea about the piece of structure. That really, really sticks in my craw. Absolutely sticks in my craw. So here is my personal rule. This is how I play gorping for me. So if I'm going somewhere and I see people catch fish and it's a spot, number one, that I know, number two, was on my list to hit that day, and I see people catching fish, I do not feel guilty about moving in. I was going to come there anyway. That's on my list of spots, and I have a plan every day. If you want me to write it down every day, I'd be more than happy to write it down for you, but I have a plan A, B, C, D, and E every single day. I know what I'm going to do, and what then those results are going to move me to the next piece of the puzzle. So if it's a spot that I was going to hit, and I'm running between spot A and spot B, and that was spot C, and I see a bunch of nets go, I'm sliding in, and I don't feel guilty about it. If it's a spot I've never fished before, right? If it's a spot I've never fished before, I will mark it on my GPS, and I will not fish it right then. I will wait till the traffic clears out, and then I will go back, and I will actually graph it. Regular sonar and side scan. Is this a piece of structure? Is there rocks? Is there gravel? Is there shallow water? Where are the fish? I will actually spend 10, 12, 15, 18, 20, 25, sometimes 30 minutes figuring out that piece of structure. So when I fish it properly, as opposed to the guy who just drove over 8 feet of water where there was a whole bunch of 6, 7, 8 pound fish, got snagged in the rocks, he didn't know it was there, and just screwed the whole place up. If it's a spot I've never fished before, number one, if it's a spot I've never fished before, I will not fish it. I will not fish it until I go back and actually look at it with less boat traffic. I'll wait till everybody's gone later in the day, another day when no one's fishing it. I'll go back and I'll graph it, and then I will feel comfortable actually fishing it. I do not, and this is from the bottom of my heart, I do not see somebody catching fish in a spot I've never fished before. I don't care if there's 100 boats and 100 boats all got four fish on at the same time. If I've never fished that spot, I'm not moving in there. I think that's a big, giant hunk of crap, to be honest with you. If you don't know that spot or that area, I don't think you have any right to be there the first time. When everybody's gone, you can go back and look at it, go back and fish it, no problem. Learn it. Now you're part of that group. It's your spot, one of your spots. Go ahead and fish it, right? The other thing that drives me crazy about gorpers is gorpers will short drift a person. So like this ridge, right? So I have to get myself, I got to get about 100 yards upstream of this ridge, get my drift set up to be able to hit the ridge, because it's cattywampus to the current. So there, I have to be at the perfect angle to hit the ridge. Well, if I go up 100 yards and someone sees me catch fish on a pass and I go up 100 yards to get set up again, they slide in between me and the ridge. That's called short drifting. That's a bunch of crap. You wanna have a problem with me? Short drift me. Fish next to me, get upstream of me. I don't care. Do not short drift. I'm the nicest guy in the world. I share information. I share a fishing report every night, guys, and I know places are going to be crowded. But have a little respect, not just for me, for everybody. Don't short drift anybody. If everybody's going up, 500 yards to get set to come back and hit a spot, go up 500 yards. Don't go 100 and short drift everybody. That is a fast way to lose a bunch of respect from people. And I'll tell you, you get 3-4 guys. I've winked at a few charter captains, and we have pushed guys off of spots who didn't want to play properly. Get in line, watch everybody else do it. Get in line, work that line, go through the fish, and go back around and go back up. So just some etiquette. Don't fish a spot you've never fished before just because there's nets until you get a chance to go back and actually look at it. Don't ever short drift a guy, right? and watch a little bit. See where they're catching their fish. How are they setting up? How are they drifting? Are they adjusting their line, right? Do those things before you slide into a spot. And if you learn how to fish it, you know, we had another guy that same night. I left it. I came back about an hour later. We caught three nice fish on it. Had another guy come down the channel, and I'm like, oh, here we go again. And he pulled in, and I watched him make his adjustments. I'm like, okay, this guy's fished here before because he knows what he's doing. By the time he made his drift, we were kind of at the end. We started yakking and talking and having a good old time. We shared what colors were working. I took a picture of him and his buddy. Each had a nice fish on that ridge. I took a picture of them in their boat. Perfect. You could tell that guy had fished that ridge before. He has every right to be there with me. We just took turns drifting by it. He'd watch me catch a couple. Then I'd go back up and watch him catch a couple. And we just had a riot, right? The first guy that moved in just, you know, it takes a lot to get me mad. And I didn't get mad, but boy, it sure is frustrating when you get somebody that doesn't want to play. Same thing with trolling, right? See this all the time. We'll get five or six charter boat captains. We'll kind of be making a loop and making a circle, and the fish are here. Then we go out and around and get back set up and get back to the fish. You know, and it's not just charter guys. It's other fishermen too. Then all of a sudden, one guy will go through the fish, make a hard turn, and then go back through the fish again. That's a fast way to get pushed off a spot. If there's two, three, four, five boats fishing and everybody's making a loop and going through the fish in order, get in line. It's not that hard. If everybody's trolling east to west, don't troll north to south. Don't be that guy. Don't understand why people don't get, look at the places we fish, Detroit River, Saginaw Bay, Lake Erie, the Lake St. Clair River, Lake St. Clair, there's enough fish, right? You don't have to cut everybody off to get the fish. That's not the situation. Get in line, enjoy it, have fun with it. Don't be a jerk, number one. Don't be a gorper, number two. So now you know what a gorper is. A gorper is a guy who moves in on a spot and moves in on a spot he's never been on and doesn't know how to fish and screws it up for everybody else. So maybe we need some bumper stickers, right? Don't be a gorper. So that's what a gorper is, okay? All right, anybody want to make any comments about that? I'm sure I'm going to get blasted, you know, because I know how people think, but you know, anybody want to make any comments about that type of stuff? Anybody have, you know, anything that you do? Like I said, my rule of thumb is pretty simple. If it's a spot I've never fished or don't know about, I mark it. I'll be honest with you. If you're catching fish, I see a bunch of guys netting fish, I've never fished it, I'm going to mark it, but I'm going to come back and I'm going to look at it first before I fish it because I want to fish it properly. So just something to think about. So anybody have any comments about that? Any questions, any comments, anybody want to yak about that? Look, at a lot of fish, a lot of water, we can all get along. It only takes one guy. I've always said I could fish, you know, a 100-yard stretch by 30-yard stretch with 10 tournament guys or 10 charter boats, and all of a sudden you get one guy in there that screws it up for everybody. Right. So there you go. Ron says, I love slip bobber fishing. I've had guys move in right on top of the structure I'm fishing because they have seen me take a fish or two. So annoying. Yeah. Anytime a guy is anchored, right? So we used to have on the PWT, we used to have a rule. You got a buoy, an official marker buoy. And if you were anchored up or you were doing something, you'd throw your buoy and it created a 100-foot circle. And nobody could come inside that 100-foot circle when you threw your bobber or threw your buoy. That's my rule of thumb on a piece of structure. So if I see Ron slip bobbering, from his bobber, I'm going to draw a 100-foot circle and I'm not going to go inside that 100-foot circle. So he could be fishing one end of a ridge and I could be fishing the other end, but I'm not going to get inside that 100-foot circle of where he's fishing. Not a 100-foot circle of his boat, 100-foot circle of where he's casting or bobber fishing. That's again, my rule, just out of respect, just the way we used to do it, tournament fishing. You know, I think that's a big deal. Look at sometimes there's a one or two, three. Look at ask the guys who fish the Mississippi River, pool four, pool three. There's like five spots you have a chance of winning the tournament on, and if you draw boat number 78, you ain't getting one of them. That just is what it is, and that's just what happens. It's just one of the deals, you know. But if somebody's on a spot, especially a small spot, I don't care if you know it, you fish it. I don't care if you live on the lake. You cannot go in there. That's not how this works. Like Gary said, one of the reasons they quit fishing Little Bay to Knock at night because of that guy not going with the trollers, trolling opposite to us with wide boards. That's when you're in traffic. Look at my traditional three rod set is 100 feet to my outside board. If I'm in traffic or I'm in front of a river mouth or whatever the case may be, I may bring that board into 50 feet. You don't get a 400 foot swath when there's a spot. It's just, you have to be considerate. Steve is right. Saginaw Bay has way too many gorpers. He says, I go to my waypoint and start catching fish, and pretty soon I'm surrounded by boats going every which way. That's why I don't like calm days when I'm trolling. I like legitimate wind that makes you kind of focus on your direction, because when it's calm, people will cut every single direction, right? And remember, right, I'm going to ruffle some feathers here, I'm sure, but if I see one of you doing this, I know you're one of our guys, you're going to get talked to. The person on the right always has the right of way. So I don't care if you're driving to a waypoint, you've been fishing for 5 hours, and this guy is coming for the first time. If he's on your right, he gets to go to the spot. The person on the right always has the right of way in a boat. Let me say it again. The person on the right always has the right of way. The person on the right always has the right of way. I don't care what the situation is. I don't care if you've been fishing there for 5 hours by yourself and this guy come out and saw you and he's passing. If he's on your right, you have to give way to him. It's that simple. That simple. John says, the sad thing is the people on here care about the sport and others. It's the rest of the world that just won't get this or care. It is, but all I can do is take care of, my little world and the guys that are in it and expect, set a standard and expect that, our guys, that's one of the reasons we put the stickers on the boat. We want to hold you to a higher standard. And if someone sees you acting properly and they say, hey, that was one of the teaching fishing guys and he gave me some room. That's important. Or worst case, I get an email. Hey, one of your guys cut me off. That doesn't sit very well with me, to be honest with you. Ron says, guys wreck wing dam fishing all the time in Mississippi. I think a lot of guys, and I see this on Detroit occasionally, I think a lot of guys get mad when they want to fish a spot and you're there. So you're anchored up, drop back fishing on a wing dam, and they want that wing dam. They'll ruin it on purpose. And that's crap, right? Making somebody's day bad because you're a jerk and you didn't get there first. That's just a bad attitude and a bad, bad way to live your life. Just a little thought. That Gorpin thing came up the other day, and I just wanted to kind of share some thoughts about etiquette. A lot of places we fish, they're community spots. There's a lot of people. Get in there and talk to the guys and have a good time and get in line, and everybody's going to be helpful. There's not a single person that gets in line and does it right that if I'm catching fish and they're not. I threw a guy 4 jigs and a bunch of bodies the other day. We were all fishing a 150-yard stretch, and there was 200 of us there, and I was catching them, and this guy was struggling. I tossed him 4 jigs and 12 bodies and said, here, put this on, because he was doing it right. Right. There was people in that drift that I probably wouldn't have thrown a life ring to if they were in the water. So have some respect for everybody else. Do it the right way. Even if it costs you a pass or a drift or whatever, do it the right way. That's pretty important. Okay. All right, I want to wrap this up with this real quick. Number one, don't forget the Teaching Fish and Anglers Club topic this month is inland lake walleye. We're going to dig really deep into inland lake walleye. If you do a lot of inland lake walleye fishing, you need to be part of the Teaching Fish and Anglers Club. You can join that at teachingfishing.com. Remember, if you sign up right now, you become a member in May, but you have complete access to everything we've done all the way back to January included in your membership. So you don't just get May through December. Once you sign up, you get access to everything we've done this year. We've done some cool stuff and got some really neat stuff coming up. So please be a part of the membership. Real quick, Kurt, I shot very, very well today. I shot 43 tonight. Listen to this. 43 tonight with 2 doubles and a quad. So I was 8 over on 3 holes and still shot 43. So, played pretty good tonight, actually. Hitting the ball pretty good for the second time out. So excited about where we're going to go this year. Got new irons. Actually, thank you to Forrest Menzing if he's watching. So, Forrest had a set of irons that he wasn't using, and they were much better than my 35-year-old ones that I had fit for me when I was 162 pounds. So anyway, all right, I want to wrap it up with this. You saw a post on Teaching Fishing. Ray Scott passed away. You know, Ray Scott was the person that started BASS. Him and a couple other guys, Bob Cobb, and there was a few other guys that Bob Cobb passed away a couple years ago. But Ray was kind of the, I guess the best word to describe Ray Scott was a cowboy, a maverick. He went against what everybody told him couldn't be done, and he built up a membership group that allowed them to teach bass fishing and allow them to promote the best bass fishing. Same thing later that In Fisherman did with Professional Walleye Trail. The BASS allowed them a avenue. The magazine created dollars that allowed them for to create BASS Tournament Trail and to give a place to promote the best anglers that also focused on sharing information. Ray Scott passed away the other day, is 88 years old, right? And when I think about where we are right now in the fishing world, I don't care if it's bass fishing, striper, don't care. There are three people who instantly come to mind. And again, I am so thankful. I grew up as this thing was happening, right? And I was on it. I read every single article, watched every TV show, dug through every magazine. I was constantly reading fishing stuff as this was happening, right? I mean, back in the, you know, 72, 73, 74, 75, you know, I mean, at 7, 8 years old, I was reading Fishing Facts magazine front to back every single month, Field and Stream front to back every single month as a 7, 8 year old. I just dug fishing information. But Ray Scott, so here's the way I look at it, right? So there's four people I would put on the Mount Rushmore. That's another one. Doug Hanna's another one. That's Doug goes a little bit deeper. My Mount Rushmore of fishing is Buck Perry, Al Lindner, Ray Scott, Forrest Wood. And the reason I say that is this. Buck Perry gave us the foundation of everything we're doing now. Now, everything that Buck thought was right was not true. And we're finding out, you know, every year that some of the things he talked about, you know, fish living in deep water, moving to shallow water to feed and coming back, doesn't always happen. The fish have a tendency to live close to where their bait is. But he got 95% of it right. This guy was mapping structure with spoon plugs before Daryl Lawrence even thought about making a sonar unit, right? So Buck Perry kind of laid the foundation of smart fishing, fishing with a purpose, having a plan, planning a trip, that type of thing. Okay. So sit tight, John. I'm going to get to that. So my Mount Rushmore of fishing is Buck Perry. Okay. That's the guy who laid the foundation. Second on that Mount Rushmore is Al Lindner, because Al Lindner took what Buck Perry figured out, and Al Lindner was the person, along with a bunch of people at Fishing Facts, and then in Fisher Magazine. But I'm going to use Al Lindner kind of as a spearhead, because if you understand the history of all of that, Al was kind of the guy that kind of put his nose out there and said, we can do this, right? And kind of brought the whole group together. Al Lindner took what Buck Perry came up with and made it understandable to the common angler and made it easy for the common angler to apply it. So we could take Buck's knowledge. Al gave us an easy way to understand it so we could actually go to the lake and use the knowledge. So Al Lindner's the second on there. Forrest Wood came along, and Forrest Wood gave us really the first platform to be able to fish out of, the first boats that were controllable, the first boats that were designed for bow mount electric trolling motors, the first boats that were semi-safe to take out in big water, the first boats that had, you know, sonar units mounted on the dash, that had upright flotation. So Forrest Wood at Ranger Boats gave us the platform to be able to go out and apply what Al Lindner helped us understand that Buck Perry taught us. And then the fourth person on that Mount Rushmore is Ray Scott, because Ray Scott created the stage that has been copied in every species since, but he gave the stage and the media platform for the best anglers in the world to show off their talents and share what they were doing with the general public. So that is kind of my my Mount Rushmore of fishing, right? Then we can go one step down and kind of do a second level. And these are the people that Doug Hanna comes to mind. That Doug Hanna changed bass fishing. If you don't know who Doug Hanna is, do a Google search. This guy was absolutely 100% amazing. Second person would be Daryl Lawrence. I think that's an extremely port of that puzzle. Johnny, we're on the same wavelength. Bill Binkleman would be my third person on that second level. Now, Bill, along with some guys from Fishing Facts, Bill is the guy who basically developed the live bait techniques that Al Lindner would make famous with the Lindy rig. That was Bill Binkleman. He was the first guy that talked about fluorescence, the first guy that talked about walleyes could see fluorescence, you know, chartreuses and orange and lime greens, the first guy to come up with a walking sinker, live bait rigs, soft action rods with some backbone so you could actually move. The fish could actually suck in your bait and you could actually give them that, but then be able to set the hook. Bill Binkleman, again, another guy that unfortunately gets lost to history because he wasn't a sexy guy. But just one of the guys. So he's my fourth guy or third guy. And I would say on that second echelon, the next person that I would put on there, and this can be up for debate, maybe we can debate this some other day, but the person that I would put on that second tier, as far as the Mount Rushmore of fishing, that person would be Virgil Ward. And I say that because Virgil Ward brought fishing education to TV. He was the first guy that really broke down what he was doing, showed you his lures in a tank, talked to you about why he was actually fishing what he was fishing. He was kind of the pioneer of the media, TV, mass media fishing education world that obviously the Lindners copied and Roland Martin and Jimmy Houston and Orlando Wilson and the list, you know, the list goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. But that second tier of guys, Doug Hanna, Bill Binkleman, Daryl Lawrence, and again, I would add as my fourth guy, I would add Virgil Ward because he was the one that kind of developed the format of the fishing education show. And had a really cool theme song too. So anyway, all right, I just wanted to share with you, rest in peace, Ray Scott. You know, obviously we've lost Ray Scott. We've lost Forrest Wood. We lost those other guys. The only one of those group that is still alive is Al Lindner right now. We lost Daryl Lawrence, I think 2 or 3 years ago. Someone says Babe Winkleman, and I will not put Babe Winkleman on this list. I'll tell you some stories in private if you want to hear them, George, but I will not put Babe Winkleman on that list for a couple reasons. So anyway, there you go. Great night tonight. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Don't be a gorper. Wear your life jacket. Sign up for a trolling boot camp. We don't have a lot of spots left. And get down to Detroit River. Detroit River is amazing right now. Left the dock at 7 today. 8:06, our 24th walleye went in the live well. Fishing is just going to get better most days. I'm sure we'll have a day or two where they move and we kind of don't get on them right away, but fishing is great. All right, guys, I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you for the folks behind the camera that made me look good. We're still looking for that tall, skinny filter, but appreciate all the work that gets done behind the scenes to make this happen. I hope you guys say thank you to our production folks that really make us look good, take care of the website and everything else. Teach the Fish and Anglers Club, make sure you sign up. Great month this month, and you have access to all the information we've done all the way back to January if you sign up right now. Have a great night. Thanks for joining me, and I will see you back here next Wednesday for Coffee Hour Plus. Have a great night, guys.